And welcome back, everybody. It's another episode of Benched with Bubba, episode 826. Continuing our team-by-team previews to get you ready for the 2026 fantasy baseball season. And we stick in the NL Central with the Cincinnati Reds, ballpark we love to target hitters in, and pitchers make us very scared. In order to help us preview this team that's been getting better and better every year we've done this preview, things have changed tremendously since the first time we did this. You can find them over at RotoWire. MLB Network Radio. He's one of the founding fathers of RotoWire, the way I look at it. He's on Twitter at Jeff_Erickson, and he's got the best podcast on Sunday nights with Scott Jensted. Jeff Erickson, how are we doing, my friend?
I'm doing well. I started last night on the podcast. Jensted's still going to be a couple weeks before he jumps back in it, but our good friend, mutual friend Paul Spohr co-hosted with me last night, so that was a blast. We went a mere hour, 45 minutes breaking down changes in the AL, so, you know, because, you know, and both of us are, it's hard to pry words out of us there. We're very quiet, soft-spoken, no opinions whatsoever.
None at all. So, yeah, that is on my queue of things to do after my recording day of Monday, and I will be listening to podcasts on Tuesday to catch up on everything. But was very excited to see that that tall man with the mustache was joining you to take Jensted's spot for the day. And Paul is quite the novice, and especially you did the AL, so there's a Detroit Tigers involved. Bet you had a few opinions on that.
May have come up. And don't worry, yeah. Jensted will be back on February 15th. So, you know, if we could replace me with Spohr and then keep Jensted, that's what the public would really want. But you're stuck with me still, too. No, and Fred Zinke's back on Tuesday, so excited about that.
Oh, beautiful. So you guys are back to basically the rotation.
Yes, sir.
Good. Yeah, you have to stick around, Jeff, because Ryan hates my puns and dad jokes. Like, you need to keep the industry afloat there. I can't be the one making worse ones.
And we can't be the sole purveyor. We need power in numbers, my friend.
We do. It's not fair. Before we talk Reds, people should know RotoWire. If they don't, go ahead and let them know what you guys got going on. There's, I know James just released another update of his rankings. There's always something going on over there.
About a week and a half ago, James did his top 400, maybe even 2.5 weeks ago. He was out early this year with that. He also does one of my favorite features, the 50 rookies that you can draft for this year. Did a separate article on that. And he did that in the fall, and then he updated it there with changing ADP and all that. Really good stuff there. Our draft kit is live. You can use promo code ROTO15, get 15% off any RotoWire subscription. Our draft kit's out there. Our projections are out there. We've got a lot of different ways to tackle your fantasy baseball leagues, a lot of customizable tools, including our My Leagues feature where you can import your league and then tie that to either it's our rankings. If you want to do it to our projected starters grid, just tweeted about that today. I know everybody loves the projected starters. So tie that in. It's a good way to find two start starters each week. I know that. And see which starting pitchers are available in your league. So that's a good way to kind of two features in one.
Yeah, I saw Clay tweet out the projected starters so far, and I'm like, oh man, because that is Ryan and I talk about it every Thursday for our Fab show. That's like our go-to. We use that grid all the time. I know we're not alone in that one. So there's tons of good stuff for RotoWire, but go check them out, everybody. If you haven't, for some strange reason, go do it and take advantage of that discount. All right, before we talk 2026 Reds, Jeff, first question I ask every person on these shows, what was your thoughts on how 2025 went for the Reds? Only one team ever is really happy with how things went.
But right.
How did it go in your neck of the woods?
Well, making the playoffs was a thrill. I actually got to go to a playoff game. It did not end well, but that's okay. It was against the Dodgers. I didn't have high expectations. They fell short of even those expectations by leaving the bases loaded and nobody out, not once but twice in that same game. So that was wicked. But all in all, progress was made. There was still some unhappiness in the fan base. Reds Twitter is not necessarily a happy place, and understandable too. Like there's some things that, you know, Tito Francona was really good about managing people. There was a lot of questioning of tactical decisions starting on opening day. With Ian Jabeau getting the save chance there, sir, not appearing in this film now. But at the same time, progress was made. Really good strides made on the pitching side of things. The offense was disappointing. Efforts to address said offense this offseason until about 25, 26 hours ago was very disappointing. But, you know, all of a sudden we're a little bit of a happier bunch now.
Yeah, big power addition that we will talk about shortly that was needed, because the Reds have made moves this offseason, like not as many as you've read Twitter would probably appreciate, but it was always like, we'll talk about like the JJ Bleday's of the world and stuff like that, where more filler fodder than actual the thump that the lineup was looking for. Let's get to it then. Let's get to the hitting side of the things first, and we'll start with Elly De La Cruz, who each and every year, it's like, we know the talent is outstanding. It's hard to deny that. It's just, which, you know, do we get the guy that swings and misses a ton? Do we get the guy that doesn't hit home runs in the second half? And there might be reasons for that. We really know. But what's your thoughts on Elly this year? Because he's still a first-round talent. If you want him, you got to pay a, you know, he's out in the middle of the first round right now.
Yeah, absolutely. It was all in all a disappointing second half after he got off to a lightning start in the season. Went a 74-game stretch where he had one home run. And as we found, we knew he was playing hurt, but we found out in late July he suffered a quad strain. But if he suffered that quad strain in late July, that doesn't explain one home run for the first 30 days of that stretch there. He really, you know, hit a lot more ground balls, which we don't want to see. And he looked a little bit lost up there at times. So I can't really attribute the injury to all of the drop in the second half of the season. I think it's some of it there. Would he have benefited from a day off or two? Sure. Didn't get it. Wouldn't take it. 162 games last year, 160 the year before. I think he will be told that he's going to get a day off here and there at some points this year. I worry about Elly De La Cruz's platoon split. You know, he has 13 homers over the last 3 years against left-handed pitchers. He's slugging in the low 300s against lefties. Those are things that kind of are a little bit scary, because teams are now bringing in lefty specialists to face him here and there. 329 slug against left-handed pitchers over the last 3 years. Still, look at the age, look at what he's produced so far, and there's still plenty of reasons to be optimistic, you know, especially if he can recover some of that power. Keeping in mind, too, he's 24. That has a lot to do with our high expectations of him. Would you take him in the first round on a 15-teamer?
No, I've always kind of been anti-Elly, just because when we're talking shortstop, I am a gigantic Lindor fan. I'm starting to buy more into Gunnar Henderson, so it's tricky, because I agree that Elly, if he ever just puts it all together, we're not going to see many seasons like a player of his talent could probably put together, but right. I just don't know if it'll happen, so I usually pass on him. I like a little more, I guess, certainty or safety with my first-round pick.
Yeah, I could have asked you 12-team league, because he's not getting out of the first round, even in a 12-teamer. Max pick in the online championship is 12 since January 1st. So there's some things about that. Some other things to keep in mind, off-field maybe not even. It's kind of part of the psyche. Reds declined his permission for him to play in the WBC because of the injury concerns at the end of the year last year. I think they just want him to avoid the wear and tear. He also turned down an initial big offer from the Reds on a contract extension. The news came out about it this offseason. It happened actually last offseason, though, initially. So I don't know if there is a secondary offer. I kind of was unclear in reading about that. But point is, Reds want to lock him up, but he doesn't want to be necessarily tied down. And I think Scott Boras is his agent, too. So,
well, that explains that.
Yeah, it does. It does at that. If the player really wants to stay, though, usually even Boras will accede to a player's wishes as far as that goes, in terms of, you know, nailing down an extension. But, you know, you don't want to sign if you're Elly, you don't want to sign after what's perceived to be a down year, right? So I totally get it on his behalf there. There's no risk of him like falling out of the league at this point in time. Just that things can turn quickly sometimes. I think he needs to it's still that. The feel of the strike zone is always an issue with him. Such a tall player, such a big strike zone. I think that's part of it. A lot of moving parts, and he's a switch hitter. You know, is there a time where maybe he dabbles in just going lefty only? And what does that mean? Because, you know, if you look at what he's done against lefties while batting right-handed, it's not pretty.
No, it's a great question, a great point. We see a lot of guys as they get older in their career switching to just one way. Basically,
yeah,
definitely not as common as it was when I was younger and you were younger, Jeff. So, yeah. Like, it used to be a lot more common to see switch hitters out there, so it would make a lot of sense. And, yeah, I hope he locks it down, because for the Reds fans' sake, he'd be a fun one to root for a very long time. But, Boras has ways to screw a lot of that up, so we'll see on Elly De La Cruz. let's talk about your new power hitting third baseman who's back home, I guess is what we'll say, because he once was a Cincinnati Red, left for a little while, struggled, then figured it out again. 49 home runs last year, only hit .228, but we usually don't expect Eugenio Suarez to hit with a big batting average. We just want the power. We saw the 49 homers. We saw 30 the previous season. A lot of 29s and 30s in there prior to that. So what are your thoughts on Eugenio Suarez, now a member of the Reds, and the rumors of it's like a DH third base kind of off and on situation?
I think it'll almost be strictly DH because, you know, he kind of clanks with his glove. We'll see. If there's times when they want to have a more offensive lineup there, maybe then, you know, they say they want to get a lefty bat like JJ Bleda or Will Benson in there. Maybe they take Brian Hayes out of lineup for a day, but because they are a very right-handed heavy team, and we'll talk about that in a little bit. But I like the signing. I'm very happy with it. It's hard to go wrong with a 1-year deal. There's an option for 27, but it's a no buyout option too. So very risk-free as far as it goes for the Reds. He is beloved in Cincinnati, both by the fan base and in the clubhouse. You know, he's thrilled to go there. He turned down, I think, longer years and maybe even more AAV to go with the Pirates and perhaps even the Mariners, because this is a place he wants to be at. For obvious reasons, though, it's a great place for him to hit. He's had many of his best years there. And he's awful in T-Mobile. Just awful in T-Mobile, too. 29 games in T-Mobile last year. Hit 111, 192, 287 with 43 strikeouts and 120 plate appearances. So if you look at like projection systems, you look at, you mentioned the .228. Just those 29 games in T-Mobile really pulled down that batting average a ton. I think he hit .248 with Arizona just as a comparison point. So it really did drag him down quite a bit. Does he strike out a lot? Yes, he does. Batting average will still be a risk, even in Cincinnati. But this is as good of a landing spot as we could have hoped for at this time of year. It's the best player the Reds could have hoped to have landed at this point in the year. They needed power, especially. They were hurting for a power bat in this lineup there. Really, they hadn't recovered since trading him away in the first place in terms of having a guy with the power bat there. CES didn't work out. I think that was a bitter disappointment. And this pretty much closes the door on Encarnacion Strand, by the way. It's a fun signing. It makes them more right-handed heavy. It does. They are kind of got a playing time concern because they have Hayes and he's got 4 years left on his contract. They've got Sal Stewart and Spencer Steer. Now there is a world where all four of those can be in the lineup, but that makes them, they're all right-handed hitters. You factor in, you've got a right-handed Matt McClain, a right-handed Tyler Stevenson, a right-hander Noel V. Marte. Makes them pretty vulnerable against an elite right-handed starting pitching there. So something to be aware of there in terms of maybe sometimes something's going to shake out. Every one of those guys I listed could like sit one time and that could shift things up a little bit. But I think what you're going to see is like Stewart could risk of playing time. Steer could be at risk of losing playing time.
Yeah. And that's the fear. Hopefully we see kind of maybe trends during spring training. We'll have to wait and see on that to see what Tito wants to do there. But we'll talk about Stewart and Steer in a minute. I'm a big Sal Stewart fan, so I'm hoping it's not too bad in that regard.
Right.
Let's go to kind of the veteran of the Reds right now, and TJ Friedl. He's been here for quite some time. Last year, putting back and played 152 games most of his career after being injured for most of 2024, it felt like. He still played half the season, but 14 homers, 12 steals, hit .261. Very serviceable is the way I'll say it with TJ Friedl. ADP in draft champions, we're talking 270-ish, 275 over the last 7 days. What are your thoughts on TJ Friedl right now as your starting, I guess, center fielder in Cincinnati?
I think he's probably better for the Reds than he is for us in fantasy, unfortunately. The 14 homers were fine. That's okay. Although he had 18 in 2023. Where'd the stolen bases go, though? Only 12 stolen bases after 27 in 23. I think he probably was limited a little bit there in terms of red light, green light, just maybe trying to keep him a little healthier there. I think that might be part of it because the Reds as a team, they're not afraid of running, but Friedl didn't run it nearly as much. He's in his age 30 year. He's actually like the veteran in this offense besides Suarez. So that I'm kind of interested to see how that plays out a little bit in terms of him getting a day off here and there, whether or not, you know, he runs more after a full healthy season, played 152 games last year. But yeah, you know, he's always affordable. He's never going to be like a huge standout in one category, but he's a solid, can't hurt you, you know, playing time sort of guy there, especially in runs scored. He's not going to help you in RBI a whole lot there because he's almost always going to be the leadoff hitter too.
Yeah, it seems like a much deeper play, streaming play in 12s and probably a fifth outfielder for some in deeper formats. If the speed comes back, it'd be tremendous to your point, but where did it go? Going to be 31 this season. Doesn't always come back eventually at that age. Let's talk Sal Stewart. Flip side of this, 22 years old, much younger ball player here, and torched AAA and AA last season. The contact metrics were ridiculous for what he did as an age 21. Looked pretty good in a very small sample with the Reds. Now, to your point, though, especially with Eugenio in town, there's a crunch with Sal Stewart. It was because he was going to play DH at one point. It felt like could play first base. A lot of factors here. How do you approach Sal Stewart now heading into this season? Because if it's only one game a week, you can live with that, but it might not.
Right. Well, he spent his whole offseason taking reps at first base. You know, it was the whole idea was he was going to come in and play first base, and he still might be. It might be that case there. You know, he had to learn on the fly last year, actually. Hadn't played a whole lot of first base in the minors when he got the call, but the Reds traded for Ke'Bryan Hayes at the deadline, and that shifted their plans a little bit there. It might have delayed him even getting the call to the majors until the September roster expansion. Also lost 20 pounds in the offseason. Kind of took working on his body to heart. That was one of the things. Always known as a hard worker, but his oddly enough, his fitness was a little bit of a concern. That's something I like to see as well. I think there's a lot of upside for Sal Stewart, but I worry a little bit about, you know, Tito, you know, saying, hey, you got to earn that playing time, et cetera, et cetera. That's going to be a little bit of a concern for me. And that, you know, that's the thing that signing, that's like the possible only tiny little downside to signing Suarez is just the positions, but they needed that. This is still, I think there's a world where they can coexist, and even Spencer Steer can play left field a little bit. In fact, I might be a little bit more worried about Steer than I am Stewart.
Yes, I'm with you there. And that's kind of the argument I made with Ryan on our recent show when this news dropped and talking with some other people. I was like, I think Stewart, between DH and first base, we got a chance. Mm-hmm. Steer feels like he's just going to kind of be all over the place, which is fine because he can play all over the place. So that plays out. But I think Stewart's like Tito, I remember reading a comment this offseason where he flat out said, watching Stewart last year is one of the, and on the best was the word he used, but one of the best young hitters he's seen in a long time, like in person, like even just the way the ball came off his bat. And Tito's seen a lot. So yes, to have comments like that, it's either A, he's a veteran manager trying to boost up his young guy's confidence, or he's seen it all. Either way, bodes well for trying to.
And Mark Sheldon from MLB.com covers the Reds, kind of had a comment today saying that Steer is going to be left field / super utility. So that kind of tells you what you kind of expect there.
Yep. So let's talk about Spencer Steer. If he is left field / super utility, that definitely hampers stuff here. He had 21 home runs last year, three straight years of at least 20 home runs for Spencer Steer. And he played hurt a lot too, which is pretty impressive for what he did. But if he is left field super utility, how are we viewing him for fantasy? Because for the Reds, he's probably still great with all things considered. But for us, it might be a little challenging.
It is, because he's on the wrong, you know, again, so many right-handers on this team. If there ever does to be a platoon split that develops, guess what? He's going to be the guy that loses some playing time because he's right-handed. Although, hey, no, there's a non-zero chance Nuelva Marte gets hurt by this too, by the way. Just another thing to keep in mind. Currently, only first base eligible. He'll pick up that outfield eligibility relatively quickly, I would guess, but 11 games in the outfield last year, 122 at first base. Ironically, only one game in right field last year and only like seven games in his career in right field. So if Marte were to sit at all, you know, it may not be for Steer. It may be that they put someone like a Will Benson out there or JJ Blade, and that's how they shift that there to get another left-handed bat into the lineup.
No, that makes sense, because I didn't realize it until You mentioned at the start of the show that it is a very righty heavy lineup, and that's why like a JJ Bleda came into play this offseason, who we'll talk about, and that's why like they still don't get rid of Will Benson. He strictly is that lefty handy bat that comes out there and does things, because if you just pull up like their roster, they have a total of three lefties potentially on this starting team, and that isn't a lot for most teams in baseball, so that makes a ton of sense. Matt McClain. This is a player we've talked each year about. Last year, came back 15 homers, 18 steals at 220. That was after missing all of 2024. So I kind of like, hey, the power, the speed were there. The hit tool wasn't, but a year off, I'm willing to give the benefit of the doubt. You watched him a lot more. Maybe he really was that bad. Not sure. What are your thoughts on McClain this year? His ADP is around 215-ish these days.
Yeah, he had a good month of June. That was like his only good month. And then he kind of cratered back again. That was frustrating a little bit. But – you know, he gets a regular offseason this year. He's not rehabbing injuries anymore. We got the obligatory added 12 pounds of muscle update on him. Charlie Goldsmith reporting that. He's a good source out there for all things Reds. I'm willing to give him a little bit of benefit of doubt, but I also think that I, among others, overvalued his first taste of the majors. Remember, he lost an entire season in 2024. What he did in 2023 was really, really good, but there was the batting eye issues, the strikeout issues were there. 115 strikeouts in 89 games in his rookie season, up to 167 last year. This is a team as a whole that strikes out a ton, which you should be getting the trade-off in terms of power and haven't been getting that there.
Yep. No, I fully agree. And that's I was one of the ones that was over, I guess, excited with McClain last year. I'm like, it's a year off. He was great. Mm-hmm. Like, what, we're going to work with this. But to your point, didn't pay off. Hopefully he figures it out. But at least last year, it felt like he needed to be like one of the key cogs in the wheel.
Right.
Or now he can just be a cog, if that makes sense. He doesn't have to be the main guy anymore, which is a big difference.
Bubba, you and I are in the First Pitch Arizona Speakers League, and I did draft McClain there. Also, I have an Emilio Pagan share in that one as well. So you have one red so far, Nick Lodolo, which I like. But
I love Lodolo.
Yes.
Yeah. There's a lot to like, though, for fantasy for this team, just because, like I said at the beginning, the ballpark plays well for hitters, and your pitching staff, which we'll get to, like when I put this outline together, I was like, that's actually a good starting five. Like, we haven't really had that to talk about when we've done this show. It's like Hunter Green, and so like you have a rotation right now, which is formidable for sure. Catcher to target for many these days is Tyler Stevenson. I felt like he'd always be this like big time hitter. We saw him break out with hitting 319 one year, and then we saw 19 home runs one year. I feel like he might not ever get to the full potential I had for him. I might have been too optimistic. Maybe I'm wrong, but I still think he's very, very solid, very, very good floor. What are your thoughts on Tyler Stevenson? Is he's going to be 29 this year? He feels like he's been playing forever.
Yeah, two IL trips last year, including an oblique injury to start the year. Only made it through 88 games. A little bit of a disappointing year, all things considered. That hitting for average was an issue. I still think there's some latent positivity there. I will say, you may not get the playing time you think you're bargaining for, though. You know, he had those seasons, 142 games in 23, 138 in 24. Keep in mind, no DH is going to be available for him because of the logjam at the corners and in left field. There's a good chance, if he's not catching, he's not playing. So I think maybe you cap his upside at maybe 115, 120 games.
Nope, that's great, because I think it might have been last season when I was writing up catchers, and I used to love him because he'd play first base, he'd play DH, like he'd find reps out there. And then obviously first base leaves when you have three or four options out there. Now DH with Suarez is gone. And honestly, like Trevino's not a horrible backup. Like if they feel like giving Stevenson days off, like Trevino's a very solid guy to throw out there and not be too concerned about. So it makes sense. And to keep him healthy, because as you mentioned, two IL stints last year, Stevenson has found a propensity to locate the IL at least once or twice a season, it feels like. So that checks out. I'm really curious to get your thoughts on Noelvi Marte here, because I remember talking to James a couple years ago. He was super high on him. Things didn't pan out. James is realistic and understands that injuries and whatnot took place, and it's been fun chatting with him about it since. But because I like Marte a lot, I really do. And I love the improvements we saw in the second half last year. They put him in the outfield. But now it's starting to feel like there's no room at the end for Marte if things go wrong. So what are your thoughts on Marte entering this season?
Man, I'm really trying to manifest Noelvi Marte into something more than he is. His defense got him off of third base is the reason why they traded for Cabrian Hayes in the first place, because Marte's defense was hideous at third base. That's why if you look at like Eric Halterman had your buddy Ryan Bloomfield on the RotoWire podcast last week, and they were talking about players with sub two wars. And it's because in the case of Marte, it was both the playing time thing and also, but also bad defense, especially before he made the move to right field. Ironically, he made the play of the year for the Reds in the outfield by robbing the Brewers of a home run on their in the Reds last, in the Reds last homestand to win a game on a Sunday, the Reds last home game. He preserved a win as far as that goes. So when it looked like the Brewers were going to have yet another comeback win over the Reds, because they had been doing that all season long, especially in Great American. So he had one of the defensive highlights of the year. He had one of the, I was present at one of the defensive lowlights of the year. In the regular season, Clayton Kershaw was starting against the Reds. They wanted to get as many righties in the lineup, so they put Marte in center field. Kershaw had been pulled from the game, yet the Reds like didn't immediately move Marte back to right and get a real center fielder out there. And the Dodgers staged a rally. And part of that was Marte got turned the wrong way on a ball, like one of those line drives, right over your head type of ones. So the ones that are hardest to make, you know, a real center fielder might've made the catch. Marte butchered it badly, but it was kind of like his season in a nutshell in a way. I know I'm getting a little far afield here.
No, it's fine.
There is still a 20 plus, 25, 15 season latent in him.
Yes.
Can he get there? Will he get the full-time playing time? Marte slumped in September, lost playing time as a result of that. Was not in the starting lineup. Neither he nor Sal Stewart were in the starting lineup for game two against the Dodgers, the game I was at in the playoffs there. Very upset about that. That was against Yamamoto. I understand why they wanted to load it up with lefties, but man, oh man, it was just a worse lineup because of that there. This is why Reds fans get frustrated with Tito a little bit every once in a while there. And sometimes the bunting strategies and things of that nature too. But anyways, I think there's a season there where Marte could be very good. The degree of certainty that he gets there is not high. It's not below 50%, but it's also not like a sure thing either.
Yeah, like when I started drafting in October, because that's what I do, I was really high on William Marte, and his price was reasonable. Now it's like inside 150 of late, which becomes a little too rich for my blood, because I'm with you. Like, I see the skills of, like, you know, we're talking mid-20s. We're talking, I wouldn't be shocked if he 15 to 20 steals. Like, I'm with you 100% on all of this. But now every time they'd make a transaction, I'm like, well, that's one more guy to get this way. That's one more guy to get. I'm just going down the list, and the defense obviously doesn't help with that at all. So
you October drafters are sickos, by the way. And I'm proud of you.
I fully accept it. Yeah. I fully accept it. Well, yeah, it's because you have to go do football stuff. See, I don't. I gave up doing football stuff like 4 years ago, and I embrace just, let's just keep throwing money at the wall and seeing what sticks right now.
Yeah, so. Well, hey, it probably helps your work, and it certainly helps your play. That you can focus on the baseball side of things there. Do you get just a general question? Do you ever get worn out? Do you ever feel like another draft already? Like, what point do you get to saturation point there?
It's so funny you said that, because I used to never felt like I was doing a million drafts a year. Last year I made a rule, one draft at a time. Like right now I'm doing two because the FPAS one just started, but I can work that around that. I try to limit. I used to just have like a million going at a time. I texted Ryan before the last DC, before this FPAS one started. I said, okay, this is it. No more DCs. It's Fab season. I can't do rounds 30 to 50 anymore. I'm just like, I'm done with all this. So to your point, I finally figured it out. It only took me to the age 42 to be like, hey, maybe there's a wall to this, but I found it. Yes.
You became a walking Twitter meme. Here we go again. You know, like Grand Theft Auto. Much. There you go. So there you go.
Yeah. No, but it's a great question, because I never thought I would hit that wall, but I found it this year. I'm like, I'm ready to start doing auctions or some Fab drafts. Like, I have an OC coming up next Tuesday, so we're going to start doing those things and start moving the needle that direction.
Cool.
All right, so I've mentioned J.J. Bleday a lot. We've mentioned platoons. I'm just going to group them together because you mentioned some other names here. So you got Bleday in town. You have Will Benson still. You traded for Dane Meyers, who I'm actually kind of a fan of too, but I don't know how that plays out in this situation.
Right.
So you have a log jam in the outfield, essentially. How do you see that playing out? Because at best, it's a streaming situation for Vandy, but just even real life, how do you foresee that working?
Yeah, I see it being very frustrating. It's going to take an injury for Blade / Benson to really gain a foothold, and I don't know if you really want them to gain that foothold. I think you want them to just put them in spots where they can best succeed, which means they're not very good for us for fantasy, even being on the good side of a platoon. And obviously, Myers being right-handed hitter is really kind of in a tough spot. Also, 29. I had no idea Dane Myers was 29. It feels like he should be 25.
Much younger. Yeah, much younger.
Yeah. You know, there was a hot flash there where Myers was pretty good last year with the Marlins, and then he got hurt and then just really never got a chance to get that foothold back there. I think they'll do a lot of mixing and matching. I think even Friedel will sit every once in a while. But, you know, again, because he's a left-handed hitter and their lefty hitters are so sparse, you know, it might just be there where, you know, they go last year. A lot of times what they do is do three left-handed outfielders. As soon as a lefty came into the game, whoop, hockey line change. And I think you might see a little bit of that. Maybe Friedel sticks in is the only one that stays against lefties. But if you're trying to like pull a Brewers and try to mess with the team, you have a lefty opener and then throw a righty in right after that there. Maybe that's something that they could try to do, or, you know, or vice, you know, split it, mess around with that a little bit there. If you're playing, that's a red specific strategy you could probably get away with.
Yeah, no, I can see that working. That's why it'll make streaming interesting. Well, like I can already see you and Scott in early August going, the most fabbed player this week was Will Benson. And you're just like, why? Well, they have six games against righties and Great American.
Exactly.
All right. You also mentioned Brian Hayes, and if we would have done this show on Sunday morning, he'd be actually a focal point of this conversation. But now he's in that one. Afterthought's rude, but he's getting closer to that. But you mentioned the 4 years, and he plays good defense.
Yeah.
So, yeah, how's that going to work?
He's going to play. Fantasy people are going to hate it, but his defense is just that good, and the Reds are that concerned about infield defense. They've got their prized young pitchers to try to protect here. Hayes is going to play more than people want to see. People are going to grind their teeth about this here, and I probably will at some points too when he hits another pop up in an inning there. But even. It's kind of funny, like the improvement that he saw in Cincinnati is still like he had a 657 OPS for the Reds as opposed to 569 for the Pirates. Improved isn't good enough. He still was short of good.
Yep. No, that's the funny part. Cause I remember at first, like the first couple of weeks he was there, it's like, wow, he's hitting for good average. And oh, this is good. And then it just kind of went back to Brian Hayes land.
There was that point when we all thought he was going to break out too. Look at 20, he had that 15 homer season in 23. We saw some like exit velocity gains in spring training. Oh yeah, this is it. And then he had the year he had in Pittsburgh in 2024, which was so desultory. You know, I know he was hurt for a good part of that too, but it's a shame. He never turned it around. We thought, you know, he could be like the right-handed right-handed National League version of Yandy Diaz where, if he learns to elevate a little bit more, I know Diaz hits righty. Don't yell at me. But at the same time, it never really happened. And he never got that next step up.
Yeah. There was a time there when everyone's like, oh yeah, Brian, the next 2020 guy, he's going to be great. And never happened, unfortunately. No. But you mentioned that prized starting rotation, young rotation. It's led by one Hunter Green, who, you know, every year we're just like, just stay healthy, Hunter, and we're good. Got 107 innings last year, gave us a scare, but at least he came back, looked filthy again, 150 innings the year before. But, man, ratio, strikeouts, you watch him, you probably would make a point to try to watch every start he makes because you should. He's that darn good. ADP's inside 50, and that's where it gets tricky for me because I love the skills, but he has not shown the durability to consistently be an ace. So how do you approach Hunter Green?
Well, there are groin injuries this time, at least. That is
That's a plus.
Not that we want to celebrate groin injuries, but it's not an elbow, at least. So we got that going for us. Yeah, the ballpark doesn't help him. He does have occasional gopheritis. He did have that playoff blow up start against the Dodgers. I was really bummed out about that because the Reds had a chance to steal a close game against them and get to the Dodger bullpen, but Green blew up in that game, unfortunately. but man, other than that, I mean, it's been a treasure to watch his development. Just like you said, durability is the ability he hasn't quite acquired just yet. If we could, we've got him still projected for 28 starts. So that's pretty optimistic. If he gets there, we'll see. I my numbers still have him a little below where he goes in drafts, but still 326, 109. I would take that from him. If we get 180 innings out of that, I would take that too and see where the chips fall in terms of wins.
Agreed. And that's, it's Ryan makes his own like projections aggregator. He can tweak things like, you know, like the, everybody else has their own. So he makes his own. And so we'll do some fun little drills on our show. And we did our SP preview part one, obviously Green's in that conversation. And it turned into the old, like, okay, if Jacob DeGrom just throws 140 innings, what's he worth to us? And like your point, Hunter Green, 2,800 Green starts actually equates to like, you know, 32 of some other pitchers type thing. Like it, it's that valuable, which makes him really good. So I've been much more interested in him. He's always that one of those questions when I know you get him too. It's when someone goes, what pitcher's not inside the top, you know, whatever, 10 that you could see being in the top five next year? Hunter Green's got the skills to do that anytime when he's out there. It's just, can he do it?
It's not quite the if John Mellencamp wins an Oscar sort of exercise there in terms of hypotheticals. It is. Yeah. And, you know, it's not that big of a stretch. So, yeah, I'd prefer him to be my SP2 and not my SP1. Let's put it that way.
It's got to be the old pocket aces to make that one work. Andrew Abbott. This is a pitcher that is perplexing every season because he's a fly ball pitcher in that ballpark, and he continues to outperform every metric under the sun and gets better every year, it feels like, which is just, again, perplexing. So what are your thoughts on Andrew Abbott?
Well, I mean, if you want to go by some of like the general, you know, advanced metrics, I had a 287 ERA, but a 366 FIP and a 431 XFIP. Home run to fly ball was low, it was like 8% last year. For a fly ball pitcher, like, yeah, better be. But he also, you know, it tracked though, because like the hard hit metrics also suggested he showed real growth. The barrel rate was only 8% last year, it was 9.3 the year before. Hard hit percentage was down to 33.7%. These are positive things, and if that's like sustainable, if he's really good at inducing a little bit of weaker contact, then great. I think there'll be some regressing. Regress to what? I can hear Scott Pianowski yelling that from here. My good friend from Yahoo Fantasy Sports. Scott and I have been talking fantasy together for 25 years now. It's kind of crazy. I think that he's fine where he goes, though. I think there's enough healthy skepticism of Abbott's skill set that you never really have to pay out for him. He's never like someone you pay more than a pick 200 price on him.
Yeah. Like right now over the last week or so, it's almost 220. So yeah, he's not costing you anything, which is very palatable to your point. A pitcher that I love in this rotation, especially when it comes to price, I should say, there's other pitchers I like more in this rotation, but Brady Singer, his ADP is outside of 300. So this is one of those where I'm just like, okay, I'll take my shots and see where it goes. The fly balls, again, can be scary, but he made it work last year, the 10% home run to fly ball. I just think he's kind of a floor guy that gets you your innings and makes it work. Maybe he overachieved. I don't know, but what's your thoughts on Brady Singer? It'll be year two with the Reds.
Yeah, the world needs dish diggers too. He's you know, in Major League Baseball, he has value. He eats those innings up. I'd rather not have him on my roster, but even then, volume, you can get there. You can get your Ks by volume with him because he can throw enough innings. But you know, 22% K percentage as his like career, you know, he's never going to be a huge strikeout guy. There's every once in a while, he just has one of those blowups that just crushes you. He had one of those on the final day of the season, and it induced Terry Francona to use Nick Lodolo in relief in that day because they thought they might have to win that game. The Mets instead obliged by losing, but to get the Reds in the playoffs. But it messed up the Reds' playoff rotation because of that. Lodolo couldn't pitch, couldn't start game two. Instead, he had to come. He was only available for a token amount of relief, and it was too quick of a hook on that too, for that matter. But anyways, I'm getting a far afield because that's what I do. He's solid enough. He's definitely more valuable than Jonathan India to me. So the trade was a success. He'll eat up those innings. I don't really want him on my fantasy roster that much.
It's very fair. Ryan tells me I'm crazy every time I do it too. So I get it. I definitely get it. Now, this is the player that you said earlier when we looked at my roster, you like Ryan. This is he turned me on Nick Lodolo. I've had a lot of shares this season of Nick Lodolo because last year, unlike previous year's injuries, it was like ankles and stuff. Like he still had a couple, you know, scares otherwise, but he threw over 150 innings, which we needed to see from Nick Lodolo. Are we ready to get back invested in this guy thinking we're good for 150 plus once again?
I think so. The injury, he had a slight groin tweak at the very end of the year and a blister injury, but no elbow issues. The blister, though, sometimes is something he's had in the past, so it's still like it's not a one-off. It's something you do have to worry about, and sometimes it's connected to other stuff there, so you do have to worry about that, but man, the skill upside is very high. I'm excited about him. If I do worry a little tiny bit there that every once in a while gopheritis can take over in that ballpark. That's obviously a concern a little bit there. If you look at the home road splits from Lodolo, that's one of the things. 281 on the road, 397 at home, 127 whip at home, 093 on the road. He was an ace on the road. Just wasn't quite so much on the road. Although it's funny, the K rate was higher at home. So that's one of those interesting dichotomies. You know, this is why you have multi-year samples sometimes too. But a lot of upside, a lot of upside. I still think there's a universe there where he's just as good as Hunter Green.
Agreed. Yeah, Ryan's been saying that forever, and I kept saying, well, he's always hurt. And then finally last year, he wasn't as hurt. So I know we saw how good he can be. So I'm with you guys on this one. I'm invested this season on Nick Lodolo. Chase Burns, this is like, it's almost like to me the Ellie version of their pitching staff. I think the skills are elite. I am terrified of his command. And for that reason, I usually don't pay the price for Chase Burns. Fully aware, if he can figure things out, he can just shoot the moon. But I'm not sure what to do with him this season. Where are you at on Chase Burns?
I can't pay the price for him. Pick 105. I hope to God I'm wrong. But
yeah, if he's your SP5 in real life and he's wrong.
I mean, there's a non-zero chance he's not in the rotation to start the year too. Could be Rhett Lauder. Just as a heads up on that. But my God, yeah, the upside's super huge. The command and sequencing of his pitches needs some improvement still. And health again. He missed a month of action with the flexor strain. That's something that I think we have to still have to remember a little bit there, that could still be part of it there too. The guy that throws as hard as that, we know the risks that are inherent with that, right? And we've seen it with Hunter Green for that matter. We've seen it with his teammate, Rhett Lauder for that matter, his college teammate and, you know, organization mate, something you have to watch out there just a little bit, but yeah, ridiculous upside. 67 strikeouts in 43 innings. Yeah, that speaks a lot. If you take out one start against the Boston Red Sox, his second career start, his overall numbers are great. If you look at what he did after that one disaster, he threw 38 innings and he had a 3.32 ERA and a 1.16 WHIP. It wasn't perfect, but that one outing against Boston in Fenway just wrecked his numbers for the season.
Yeah, it was one blow up, and that's all it takes. So you don't have that many innings to go off of. But yeah, skills are great. It's going to be fun to watch. Can't wait to hear your Rhett Lauder talk here in a bit because I've been looking at him late in DC. So I don't have that many shares, but very curious on the playing time there. Let's talk closer. Emilio Pagan's back, re-signed with the Reds, came out of nowhere last year. Like one of the top fab pickups of the entire season because it was like the last minute he's going to close and didn't close game one, as you mentioned earlier.
Yeah.
DeBoe did. But Pagan's back. Are we? You reinvested in the FPAS draft, or you reinvested for this season?
Yeah, as long as he's my second closer, fine. Don't want him being my first one there. Wrote an article last week talking about trying to address the closer spot in draft and hold leagues, and he's indefinite in my second pocket, the lowercase C closers. There's some things to like. 81 strikeouts and 68 innings. The fact that he got the contract 2 years, $20 million for the Reds. That's an investment. I don't think there's role insecurity to begin the year. The downside, 10 homers allowed last year, fly ball pitcher that hasn't changed. The thing he did well was he made many of them solo homers. His walk rate was acceptable. That's one of the things I did like about him there. That there are some good things there. 8% walk rate is actually a smidge higher than I thought it was, that I remembered actually. 30% strikeout rate though. You got to like that. The only problem is, he induces so many fly balls. That is the one scary thing. 0.56 ground ball fly ball last year. And that's pretty much where he's been all along. But you know, Tito knows him. You know, they've had him all along here, so he's got that veteran incumbency working in his favor. The Reds do have some other arms that they can use, though, if he does go sideways.
Yes, that is very, very true. That's why I want to get to some of those, because the main one you mentioned here is Tony Santillan, I believe is how you pronounce it.
Yep.
Big fan of his skill set. That's why, again, when you start drafting in October, Jeff, and Emilio Pagan isn't signed yet, this is a name you look at late in drafts.
Sure.
I even like Graham Ashcraft a slight bit. You have Pierce Johnson on here too, who they signed, re-signed, I think. So how do you foresee this bullpen playing out if, for some bad reason, something happens to Pagan?
I'd say Santillan's next, but I think Tito loved using him in any situation. I think he used him as a traditional fireman. You know, Pagan was more the, hey, he can close. He may not be our best pitcher, but we know he can handle the ninth inning. We can use Santillan everywhere, and he did. He used him 80 times last season. Wow. 80. That's crazy.
That's a lot.
Good, you know, considering he only was able to throw 30 innings after coming back from an injury the year before, that was a pretty hefty workload. I'd be a little tiny bit concerned about that, but man, he was great in Solds League, 7 saves and 33 holds last year. So, you know, that speaks to his flexibility there and how they can use him in a lot of different spots. Ashcraft, I feel, is like a multi-inning bridge guy, like a 4-out sort of guy. So I don't see him in the ninth inning all that often. In fact, I might see Pierce Johnson, who they got as a free agent from the Braves, as a guy that gets in that mix a little bit more. Pierce Johnson was really good for like a really long stretch at the beginning of the season for the Braves. Like, I think he had like the relief pitcher version of the perfect game where, you know, 27 consecutive outs, but all in all, still a pretty solid season, not like lights out, but another guy that I think is comfortable pitching late innings. So I think that they've got some depth there as far as that goes. And they added a couple lefties too. I don't think they're really going to factor into the closing job, but Burke and Ferguson are two guys there.
Yeah. Good adds though to depth. We kind of joke about it, at least I was joking about, like, the rotation is 5 deep, very good. And the bullpen's much better than it's been in recent years. Like, the Reds are built to do some damage. We'll see how it plays out, but they might need some prospects along the way, Jeff. So yes, what are some potential prospects we might see this year that could help the Reds?
Well, let's talk about Rhett Lauder. We've mentioned him a couple of times here already. He missed most of the season last year. With the oblique injury and then a forearm issue, made 3 starts for Peoria and the AFL this past fall. But people don't remember, he was also a first round pick the year before Chase Burns from the same school, got to the majors in 2024, acquitted himself pretty well. Keep in mind, the walks were really high. That's the one thing I'd watch for a little bit. But another guy with a live arm, a lot of promise there, and he's got a chance to win a rotation spot. You may not get there, but he's definitely, like, Paul and I were talking about drafting 6th and 7th starters in draft and hold leagues in these 50-round drafts. Lauder is one of those guys I think would be among the higher end of potential guys to go out and get.
I like that. I like that quite a bit. Who else are we looking at in Cincinnati? Because each year it seems like it seems like 2 or 3 young kids coming up and helping out at some point in time.
Hector Rodriguez has gotten a lot of positive buzz. I don't think he's like a high upside guy, but say if that a couple of outfield injuries happen, he's a Mr. Right now. He's on the 40 man, first of all. Ability to hit for average has been there. He made it to AAA last year as a 21-year-old, so age to level has been pretty good. Not a huge power upside, but I think the team likes his bat skills, his ability to not strike out. I think that plays well. I think his defense is solid enough that it could earn him a little bit of playing time. Bat's left-handed, so keep that in mind. If they need another left-handed bat, that's another way to attack that there. So don't be surprised if he plays more than you think. Cam Collier has been on this list a couple years in a row, had a down year last year. Yeah, left thumb surgery in mid-March, so just keep that in mind. Didn't get activated until June. It did sap his power a little bit last year, but This is another guy aged a level where he was really good in double A as a 20-year-old. He was a 19-year-old at high A in 2024 and had a really nice year and jumped up a lot of prospect lists. Last year was obviously ruined by the injury, but don't be surprised if he's in the mix, or at least he's in the mix. If he's a guy that gets off to a hot start, gets his name up there again. The problem is now pathway to playing time is a little blocked for him.
Yes, a little bit for sure. All right, went through the roster, got our real life and fantasy thoughts out of the way. Now the final question I have for you: what are your expectations for the 2026 Cincinnati Reds?
I'm glad you asked me this today and not 2 days ago. it would have definitely been a case there where I would have been a lot more pessimistic. I think they can contend for a wild card spot and maybe even the NL Central, though the Cubs are definitely stronger on paper, and so are the Brewers probably. I think the Brewers somehow are underrated again for like the 17th consecutive season. I think the Brewers win total bet is 84.5. Give me the over on that. Reds are at like 82.5. I lean over, but I am also wearing red color goggles the day after they signed a free agent. So it's, my mood is better. But I would be disappointed if they're not in the wild card hunt. I think that's the minimum expectation for this team.
Yeah, this team's built for a postseason run here sooner than later, because, as you know, and obviously there's that team that lives by you that wears blue and white. They're going to be tough to beat no matter what, but in a short series, if you have starters like the Reds do, they can contend with a lot of teams. So
yeah,
be real curious to see where that goes this year. That Central should, again, on paper, be really good with the Reds, the Cubs, and the Brewers. So looking forward to seeing how that plays out. But all right, Jeff, we'll wrap it up there before we head out. Always a pleasure. And let everybody know where they can find you and what RotoWire and you have coming up.
Sure. First thing to do is to go to rotowire.com. You can use promo code ROTO15 to get 15% off any RotoWire subscription. I talk a lot. You can catch me on the RotoWire baseball podcast twice a week, or check us out on YouTube as well. I'm on SiriusXM Fantasy. And then beginning on February 10th again, I'll be hosting a show with Nick Whalen on VEASAN called Prop Points. Second year in a row we've been doing that. So looking forward to that. The SiriusXM show will be from 8 to 10 Best Coast. That's 11 to 1 East Coast. And then immediately after that on VEASAN for another hour. Catch me on Twitter at Jeff_Erickson. Catch me on Blue Sky at Jeff-Erickson.
Awesome. Yeah, go like. Be shocked if you're not following him and listening to the show, but please go do that. Support RotoWire. Good people over there. Always a pleasure talking with any of them, and especially talking with you, Jeff. I will be seeing you in like 6 weeks, I believe.
Yeah.
So we'll be catching up out there in Vegas. But as always, thanks for joining me. And I'll be rooting for your Reds because they're a fun team to watch.
My pleasure. Take care.
All right, everybody. This was Bench with Bubba, episode 826, your 2026 Cincinnati Reds preview. Catch you all next time.